Hello, and welcome to a ThinkWorks special series, as your hosts Darren Smithson and Steve Lowe take us to the realm of unexplained mysteries.
Hello and welcome to another edition of ThinkWorks, the place where we do all the heavy lifting when it comes to thinking. And this week I'm joined in the studio by the professor himself, Mr. Stephen Lowe. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Darren. Hello, everyone.
And we're going to discuss another unsolved mystery, and that is Bermuda Triangle, the Devil's Triangle, as it's sometimes called. And we're going to look at some of the famous disappearances. And then we're going to take a stab at some of the explanations as to why these disappearances have occurred. And we might even actually make an assumption or two of our own. But bear with us. You may hear some rustling of papers. That's just because we want to check the dates on bits and pieces. So where do we begin? I guess we really need to describe what the Bermuda Triangle actually is.
I mean, it does exist.
Yes.
So there is something that's called Bermuda Triangle, and it's... It's off the corner of North America, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it's Miami, Puerto Rico...
And Bermuda. That's why it's called the Bermuda Triangle. But I think what it's... The fascination with it is that there have been so many mysterious disappearances of aircraft and naval vessels over the years that's been unexplained. It has a really fearsome reputation.
People are really frightened of travelling across it, aren't they? And... I mean, the thing is, what you have to bear in mind is there's two facts that you need to know about the Bermuda Triangle. One is it actually is 1 million square miles of area.
And I could add to that, Darren, as well, is that there is a trench called the Puerto Rico Trench, which stretches from South America right through Bermuda, which is, I think, it's 27,000 feet deep at some point.
Wow.
Makes it one of the biggest in the Atlantic Ocean. So... anything dropping into that trench, certainly in the years we're going to be talking about, would have been nigh on impossible to try and find it.
Well, it will be for, I think, for hundreds of years. We just haven't got the technology.
We could probably
get
down
deep
there, but not stay long enough, and certainly not traverse the trench for long enough to find it.
And then the other thing you need to know is it's one of the busiest shipping areas, and also a lot of planes fly through there, a lot of commercial planes as well. So it's always busy with ships and planes. So when you look at the sheer number of ships and planes that do traverse the Devil's Triangle, and then some go missing, maybe it's a numbers game, if you see what I mean.
Agreed.
But there's lots of different theories that have been put forward. Everything from, I love it, aliens, of course, are always in there.
A supernatural interference.
Dimensional rifts.
I've even heard people think it's haunted.
Haunted.
An entire 1 million square miles is haunted,
Yeah.
You've also got to think as well, is it an area outside the normal boundaries of physical reality and our understanding? And we haven't yet got that technology yet to try and understand what's occurred.
It could be. Arthur C. Clarke, he said it best. Any technology sufficiently advanced will be indistinguishable from magic. So
makes sense.
It does make sense. So it might just be that we don't have the scientific capability at the moment to really investigate what's going on there. We do know that it's a perfect storm area, because storms do converge very abruptly and very powerfully out of nowhere, and then just as quickly can disappear, simply because of the Gulf Stream is in there.
Well, there's lots of other, I mean, there's lots of things we could explain it by, which I think we should probably maybe discuss once we've gone through the various...
Yeah, so we'll go through... So there's lots to go at, and we're going to give you some of the top disappearances, I think.
Can I just add, Darren, for the listeners, where the name the Bermuda Triangle comes from?
Yes.
I mean, it wasn't called this at the time, but the area obviously was very mysterious going back to Columbus's time when he was exploring the Americas. I mean, his ship logs talk about having compass... anomalies, which many go the wrong way. They have logs of seeing fire in the sea. And he also recorded at one stage seeing a flicker in the horizon, as though like a candle, and that couldn't be explained. I think the name Bermuda Triangle, correct me if I'm wrong, Darren, came from a 1964 fiction magazine called Argosy.
Sounds about right.
Which they linked a few of these things together, and they called it in the actual magazine the Bermuda Triangle. Now, they never offered any explanations for it, and we're going to try and do that now.
So let's do that by looking at some of the examples, some of the key most popular disappearances that we can. We've got quite a bit of information about, even if we don't know exactly what happened. But I think the one that everybody has heard of has got to be Flight 19.
And I think just to point out as well is, you could write a full book on Flight 19, yeah, and the transcripts going on for pages and pages and pages about what happened, speculation. We have a podcast here, so we're going to summarise it. So don't be expecting massive detail. We're going to summarise what happened, what we think happened, and what the investigators discovered.
Yeah. So, Flight 19 then. So, 2 p.m., 5th of December, 1945, a convoy of five U.S. Avengers planes sets out from their base in Fort Lauderdale in Florida to practice bombing submarine targets.
Correct, yeah. There was a total of 14 men on board, and the flight leader was a U.S. Navy lieutenant called Charles Taylor.
Yeah.
And the thing is with him, he'd had 2,500 flying hours. He'd also done a combat tour in the South Pacific during World War II, so he was a very experienced pilot.
Yeah. And all was going well, apparently, until about 3:40 p.m., when the Commander Taylor became confused and thought he was in the wrong location. And this is the debate then, how did that occur? Why did they end up in the wrong location?
And about that time as well, the traffic controllers had picked up a message coming from Flight 19, and there was a trainee pilot on board, and he was actually saying to his officer, he said, "I don't know where we are, I'm lost, my compass is not working."
Yeah.
About a few minutes later, Taylor, the actual leader, he said, "I honestly don't know where I am. I've got two compasses and they're all just spinning around at the moment."
And then, but Taylor then decided that he would head what he believed to be north, which would eventually take the flight across the Florida Keys and back to safety.
Back to Fort Lauderdale, that's what he was trying to find.
Yeah. They were nowhere near Florida Keys. They were actually near the Bahamas.
Correct.
We know that much.
But what also, at this time, there were still some very sporadic interceptions of radio messages coming through. And one of the, I think it was one of the other pilots, said, "Look, I think we need to turn around, go back and go west."
Yeah.
Right? Because I don't think we're heading north.
Yeah.
Okay. Because Taylor, obviously, is confused. His instruments were saying completely different things. He inadvertently went east, thinking he was going north.
Right. So all these things factor in. So the most common theory about it is there was massive flight instrumentation failure. The captain, the commander, got confused about the direction, and eventually they literally just ran out of fuel.
But I think prior to that, he was still trying to convince traffic controller, "I am going north."
Yeah.
And they're saying, "Well, keep going, you will see land."
Yeah.
Because at the moment, he was seeing lots of broken up land, which the Florida Keys are, which that turned out to be small little islands in the Caribbean. So he just kept going, thinking, I'm going to find land eventually. But obviously, if he's going east into the Atlantic, he's not going to find much land.
Yes. So he's still flying, convinced he's going to find land. But he's running low on fuel, and that was one of the last messages?
Yeah, he said it was 1904, so he'd been travelling for quite a while going east, which he thought was north, and he did actually advise traffic controllers, "Look, I'm low on fuel, I may have to ditch if I don't find land soon."
Yeah.
And it was at that point that the Navy then decided to actually send out a rescue, or two rescue planes.
And what happened to those? Because this is where the mystery really suddenly...
Well, one of the rescue planes left from Brevard County in Florida.
Yeah.
1927 it was recorded. It had a crew of 13 personnel. When it took off, it did a routine message. I'm in the air, I'm on the way, right? But it disappeared completely from the radar 20 minutes later. Completely.
So both of them disappeared. One almost immediately after takeoff.
Yep.
One, apparently, there was a report that a fireball had been seen and shortly after takeoff again, and yet no wreckage was ever found.
I think what's important as well, it was a merchant ship actually had seen this like fireball, and he then passed not long after through an oil slick.
Yes.
Right? But there was no wreckage with that oil slick.
It's just, the whole thing is just, I mean, you can understand why there's this whole X-Files kind of groove about this particular mystery. So you've got five planes disappear after reporting strange instrumentation problems, and then two rescue planes take off to try and refuel the planes, and they both disappear as well. So that's 27 lives in just a few hours.
Just a few hours, yeah. And obviously, so such the severity of it. I mean, the Navy launched what became, and probably still is, the largest non-combat search and rescue ever undertaken.
Yes.
Outside of wartime. I think there's over 250 ships and planes involved. They covered a radius of 300 square miles for over 5 days and didn't find a bean.
No.
Not one thing.
No, and you would
no
think
evidence, nothing.
No, and you would think that, I mean, the two, okay, you can argue that the five Avenger planes were way off course and therefore the search party was looking in the wrong area. But the two plane rescue planes that took off, everyone knew where they'd taken off and the flight path that they were going to follow, and they still found no wreckage.
Correct. And the fact they both got lost, yeah. It was noted, although it was evening time at the time they set off, the weather wasn't adverse.
No.
Right, it was dark, but it wasn't adverse.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, that, of all the modern disappearances, I think this is the one that sparks the most imagination, doesn't it, about what could have possibly happened. And this is where aliens come in, time warps, dimensional rifts, I mean, all these different theories about what could have happened.
But they did have a, obviously, a massive investigation into it afterwards, and what they concluded is that, yeah, Flight 19 did run out of fuel, forcing them to obviously ditch and succumb to the elements.
Yeah.
I think that one of the rescue plane, probably a little bit more easy to explain, those type of planes actually carried extra fuel because they were going to try and refuel Flight 19, but also they wanted to do an extended search if they had to do. It made them very volatile. So any kind of spark, any kind of a problem in the cockpit, any of the plane, it would create a fireball.
Yeah.
Which explains what that merchant ship saw.
But no wreckage.
No wreckage.
Keep coming back to that with this.
We can keep going through all these plausible reasons why it occurred, and we agree it did happen, but where's the wreckage?
It's just absolutely unbelievable, isn't it? So that's Flight 19, and the US military also had another large disappearance. And this one is the USS Cyclops, a ship that vanished. So what's the story behind that one?
So the USS Cyclops was a commercial ship, and when the US declared war on Germany, they commissioned a lot of non-combatant boats at the time, and it became under the control of the US Navy. One thing to point out as well, it's the US Navy's greatest non-combatant loss of life since the Navy actually started up.
Yeah. But it was a big ship. I mean, it was capable of carrying, what was it, 8,000 tons of cargo?
At least, yeah. In fact, I think it was at the time, but when the US Navy, they'd extended the actual holds to put more actual tonnage in it so they could transport more. The actual final mission, as it became, was to actually go down to the South Atlantic to refuel some British ships, but also then go on to Brazil to pick up a lot of tonnage of manganese, obviously, and she was to do that from Rio de Janeiro, then return back to the USA.
Yeah.
So when she left Rio de Janeiro, she was 3,000 tons overloaded, but also importantly, one of her engines had a problem with it, but they deemed she was still seaworthy to set off, so off she went. So when she left Rio, she was on her way back to Maryland, but had to make an unexpected stop in Barbados. But there's no record of why she stopped there. They just know she was there, And she's there for 2 days.
Yeah.
Then she set off back to Maryland, right? And she set off on the 22nd of March, February, sorry.
Yeah.
Due to get back to Maryland on the 13th of March.
Yes.
Okay. After she left Barbados, never seen again. Never heard of again.
Yeah, and the thing with the Cyclops is because it was a long journey for her to make, with, and obviously not travelling at full speed, it was many, many days, even weeks, I think, before people even realised the ship was missing. Any survivors, if there was some kind of tragedy aboard the ship with the Magnanese, they would have been in rats for weeks before anyone even went looking for them.
And I'm bearing in mind there's over 300 people on board as well.
Yeah.
So it's one thing to miss a dinghy.
Yeah.
To miss many.
Yeah.
Assuming they did get off the boat.
Yes. So the common theory is, on this one, is that the Magnanese caused an explosion that sank the ship. But there are some other theories.
Another one is because she was overloaded.
Yeah.
She had a faulty engine. She encountered a storm,
yeah,
which are very prevalent in the Bermuda Triangle. Then without two engines, she won't be able to fight the storm. And with extra weight, she'd be struggling, obviously, with, yeah, the, obviously with the storm hitting them. So it could have been she just got into real bad trouble and sank.
Either way, not very nice for the crew.
No.
And then one of the other ones is the German captain, which is an interesting
George
take.
George Worley, who wasn't called Worley when he was christened.
No.
He was German.
And so people have put forward the theory since that he was sympathetic to the German war effort and therefore decided to take the ship away from the ability of the Americans to use the Magnanese.
Correct. And coupled with that, it's, there's other people say that it was actually sunk by a German U-boat.
Yeah.
But Germans always denied that. And after the war, First World War, when all the records were actually exposed, there was no record at all of a German U-boat being in that area at the time it went, that the Cyclops went missing.
Yeah. And apparently this German captain as well, going back to him, he wasn't very popular.
Oh, he was disliked by officers and men alike. Yeah.
So there's a theory that there was a mutiny that also went wrong.
Yeah.
And maybe caused an explosion with the Magnanese or whatever. So there's lots of different competing theories, but once again, two facts are known. One, no wreckage ever found. Two, it is completely unknown as to what actually caused the actual disappearance.
There is another one, which is, I mean, we've just come up with some ones which are rational. There are conspiracy theories think that because at the time when, obviously it's 1917,
yeah,
we'd not explored a lot of the ocean. We still haven't really.
Yeah.
But there were some creatures down there we'd not seen before. And a giant octopus,
yeah,
actually pulled the ship down.
Lost City of Atlantis. Here we go.
Whichever way you look at it, the truth's never been uncovered.
I mean, the thing is, with all the disappearances and other mysteries, at some point you are definitely always going to encounter the idea that aliens are involved, or monsters of the deep, or of deep woods, whether it's a deep wood, a deep lake, or the deep sea, is to blame, and it's just something we haven't discovered yet. But I think those two mysteries, Flight 19 and the Cyclops, they're the ones I think that most people focus on in terms of there's definitely something woo-woo going on. So what do you want to do next?
I think we're going to do the Flight of the Star Tiger.
Yeah.
So I think that's interesting for quite a number of reasons. Now, there are a number of planes, but this plane was operated by British South American Airlines.
Yeah.
And this flight in particular was going from Lisbon to Bermuda, but it was stopping in Azores to refuel. Now, the first thing I found interesting is it was a long journey they were going to make.
Yeah.
Okay. And before they set off from Lisbon, they had an engine trouble.
Which is never a good sign.
But it's 1948.
Yeah.
They just got on with it, didn't they? Yeah. We're off, boys. Jolly. Chocks away and all that stuff. So they did set off 8th of Jan, but then they did make it to the Azores.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, there was really bad weather, so they were stranded there most of the day. The captain at the time of the Star Tiger said, look, time's pressing. We've got to get these passengers to Uris River. I'm going to set off anyway, regardless. But what they did, they had another BSAA plane, gave them, was one of an escort, but they set off an hour before.
Yeah.
And they would radio any kind of weather issues back to the Star Tiger.
Yeah. Right. And so they set off an hour apart. Off they went on their little merry journey. So the scout plane landed successfully, if a little bit late, because it had been blown off course. Well,
they were both blown off course.
Yeah.
But the Star Tiger was travelling at a low altitude.
Yeah.
They're only travelling at 2,000 feet. There's two reasons. One, because in case it did have a problem with one of the engines, it wanted to be at a lower altitude.
Yeah.
So he could control the plane. But there was also the fact that he was trying to keep the passengers warm.
Yes.
Because he had tourists on board, rich tourists on board. So he flew at a lower level. Now, you correctly said that the first one did land on the 30th of January. And then apparently the Star Tiger was only an hour behind that first plane.
Yeah.
They were expecting to land.
Yeah.
It never landed.
No.
There was never any radio communication. There was never any distress signals at all. It just disappeared.
It just disappeared. And, I mean, there was a five-day search, if memory serves.
There was, yeah.
So it's not like everyone just said, oh, well, it's crashed and let's go home. They did actually search along the route, even with the knowing that the winds were blowing the planes off course. They took that into account when they did the search.
Correct.
And yet still no wreckage.
There's a report after the search and there's obviously an investigation into the disappearance. I mean, it's clear that the authorities, and these are the words verbatim that they said. Said, what happened in this case will never be known, and the fate of Star Tiger must remain an unsolved mystery. So they're accepting there and then. Although there's lots of reasoning why it may have happened, they can't tell us why. It's also fair to point out some of the explanations that the investigation came up with. Right, the aircraft's heater was notoriously unreliable, probably why he was flying at a lower speed. And also, the compasses were prone to being inaccurate.
A lot of that going around.
Yeah. You've also got the fact that he'd been flying off, he flew off course.
Yeah.
They thought he might have been an hour off course.
Yeah.
He was trying to do a trip from the Azores to Bermuda, which was 2,000 miles. At the time, it was the longest overseas flight in the world.
Yeah. So in a single go.
Yeah. So you're pushing the limit of any plane to do that.
Yeah.
The fact he could have had a dodgy engine, the fact he was flying low, you're going to use more fuel. There was a really, gone to the investigators, there's a really stronger headwind. So there are lots of reasons why this may have been a sudden catastrophic event.
Yeah, engine explosion, giving in, sudden. Any change in the weather could have slammed it down into the sea anyway. So there's lots of explanations, but it always comes back to that no wreckage found.
So you can say, I mean, it was an unreliable aircraft. I mean, the rest of the aviation fleets throughout the world had taken it out of service because it was too unreliable, too dangerous. But BSSA continued with it.
Yes.
So, again, it could have been unreliable. Could have had, is it failure? Is it design issues?
Yeah.
All these are valid things. But where did it go?
Yes. Let's do one more example then.
Yep.
And then we'll try and round this up with some theories about what may have happened, generally speaking, with all the disappearances. So a Douglas DC-3, a very reliable plane, very reliable. Even now, they're still flying in South America.
Yeah.
And yet, it still disappeared. And just 20 minutes before its scheduled landing?
It was. I mean, there have been a few little concerns. I mean, the captain said he had a warning light issue with his aircraft batteries. His landing gear also, warning light came on. But as it was in those days, they decided to set off. And the idea was the batteries would be charged during flight.
Yes.
So they'd use the onboard generators to charge the flights, okay? But he did say, the captain said, look, while I'm up there, I'll stay 10, 15 minutes. I'll circle around Puerto Rico, because this flight was going from Puerto Rico to Miami. And if they're not charged up, I'll let you know. But either way, I'll send you an in-flight report.
Yeah.
He never did.
Yeah.
He flew around for 10 minutes, then off he went.
So, again, and of course, we're not saying at any point that some of these decisions were commercial-based decisions to keep clients happy. Of course, we're not saying that at all. But there you go. So he had, again, a faulty plane, potentially.
Yep.
Even though structurally the plane itself is a very reliable plane, there was definitely something that could have caused a problem. If your batteries go, it's like a car. You know when your battery goes, even when you're driving, everything stops.
Exactly. It is interesting, though, that even though we had potentially low battery, He got to within 50 miles of Miami, or so he thought, because he radioed and said, I'm 50 miles away. This was at 3:40 in the morning.
Yeah.
However, it was the New Orleans traffic control who picked up his transmission, which was 600 miles away. So did the pilot really know his position? Did he know where he was?
So again, and there seemed to be a heck of a lot of faulty compasses that go along the Bermuda Triangle.
Absolutely. Well, it is a...
It's true north, isn't it? But we'll touch upon that later. So, and 32 people on that plane. That's another 32 people lost. No wreckage ever found. No bodies ever found. Nothing.
It also comes back to like the radio communication as well, because Miami was trying to say to the pilot of the DC-3, the wind direction have changed.
Yeah.
It's significantly more west as it was. But either that message was received or never acknowledged.
Yeah.
And there was no other messages at all.
That was it. It was gone.
Gone.
So, that's just a few of the examples that we've picked up on. There are so many. What is interesting is, in modern times, the disappearances have eased off. And one of the reasons for that could be the fact that instrumentation is so much better, and it's satellite driven.
GPS as well.
Yeah.
You can see the storms coming a lot more further ahead, so you can bypass them. Back in the 1940s, you didn't have that technology, so you could fly straight into a storm.
Yeah.
Whereas now they can avoid it.
Yeah.
You know, there's certain, and the technology of the ships as well are more robustly built as well, with the ballast and balances they have.
Yeah.
So they're more likely to be able to withstand a bad storm and take evasive action.
Yeah. Go and look up, you can look up hundreds of disappearances throughout time, but you will see there's a sudden tail off as instrumentation, I think, became much more advanced. Let's now have a look at some of the reasons or possible reasons or explanations that have been put forward.
Not just for the four examples we've given, but for
generally.
These are generally for all disappearances that have occurred in the Bermuda Triangle.
So let's start with your favourite one, which is the Gulf Stream.
This is more likely for me.
Yeah.
Because this is fact, this has been proven. So you've got some warm waters coming up from the Caribbean.
Yeah.
They go along down the south, the North American coast, the Atlantic, right? Funny enough, around that Bermuda area, and you've got cold water coming in.
Yeah.
Right. So it causes like a river in the ocean, which then has a very, very strong current. Okay.
And with it winds.
Yeah. So if you think if a plane goes down through like a fuel or malfunction, generally goes down like that, and the search and rescue folks can't find it, that plane, along with the bodies, could have been actually dragged hundreds, maybe a thousand miles away in that current.
Yeah.
So they've been looking in the wrong area for those 5 days, let's say, and that's why they never found them.
And if it crosses the trench...
They get sucked down.
Yeah.
It does raise a question, if they have been dragged away, unless they've been sucked down, why did any other commercial or military vessels, see them 1,000 miles north or 1,000 miles south?
Yeah.
They've just never been found.
Yeah.
It's a legitimate reason for me, but let's see some wreckage or something.
Yes, we need... I think that's the thing, isn't it? Until we find the wreckage of one of these, and if it is in the trench, then we know there's likely to be more in the trench. But it's how did it get to the trench as well? What caused the accident? One of my favourite ones when I was growing up, because they actually did this big announcement on the news, I'll never forget, it was on the Radio 4 News, I think it was. And they said, "Oh, we've discovered what's really happening with the Bermuda Triangle," and it was this idea about methane bubbles. The idea is that there are lots of salt crystals under the bed of that particular area, under the seabed, and because it's so volatile, these can rip open and suddenly, literally, suck all the oxygen right above it from the sea. And if there's no oxygen in the water, there's no buoyancy. And therefore, ships would literally sink in an instant like a stone. And that's the idea that I can remember. It was a big fanfare. I think it was the early 80s this particular theory is put forward. Now, you've also got the idea that methane then could cause an explosion once it hits the surface. and that could hit planes and get them in a fireball. But every single time?
I know. I think the investigation by a US leading geologist about, I'm not going to get the exact dates, but probably the last 10, 20 years.
Yeah.
They've done a lot of tests there, and by using certain records, they said, look, they don't think there's been a major methane explosion or release for around 15,000 years.
Yeah.
He also said, but even if there were, it would not be big enough to actually bring down a ship. So, in scientifically, it probably could do, but in reality...
Yeah, and also you have to remember that some of these planes were flying at a few thousand feet, and it would have to be a very powerful methane eruption to suck the buoyancy out of the air above it as well.
Yeah.
And I just at that precise moment that a plane happens to be flying over it.
It could have been a freak explosion, and it could be responsible for one or two of them, maybe the ships, but not every one that's been documented.
No. The other one is just the weird weather, just the perfect storm of, as you said, that's caused by all these conflicting weather fronts and forces within the sea and the atmosphere in that area, because you've got all that coastline surrounding
just
it.
Just a perfect storm, isn't it, as well? But there's also a phenomenon as well, which is called a waterspout.
Yeah.
If you get a very aggressive, powerful cyclone or hurricane in that area, it literally can suck water up at such a speed.
Yeah.
So these waterspouts can probably go up thousands of feet.
Yeah.
And if you've got planes that are traveling at a low level, it could... Yeah. That was going to be a perfect storm again.
Yeah.
But it could actually suck it down.
Yeah. Or blow it, of course. And then, of course, the whole thing gets completely hammered by the bad weather and runs out of fuel. So there's all that kind of taking into account. Compass miscalibration. Now, we've touched upon this as we've been going along. There seem to be a heck of a lot of faulty compasses. But there is a reason for that, isn't there?
I'll let you explain it better than I can, Darren, but I think it's well known that certainly if you work in navigation and stuff, is that the true magnetic North Pole
is not truly north.
The geological location of it.
Yes.
And obviously mariners and aviators, they understand this. They make compensation for it when they're doing their flight paths and their shipping.
But in the Bermuda Triangle, in parts of that, it is true north.
Correct.
And so if you've got a compass that, old-fashioned compasses and charts that were calibrated to the general north, and suddenly you're faced with true north, you're going to go, and it's a big area of sea and a big area of air to traverse. Even just if you're 0.1 degree off course at the start of your journey, that's a big, big gap when you get there. To the end of it, and so you're way off course, and that I think a lot of the confusion that some of the reports that have come over radio have had with people saying about the compasses being, they didn't know what to trust, they couldn't work it out, I think that to me, for not all but a lot of the disappearances, especially those that were reliant on old-fashioned instrumentation, I think that could be part of the puzzle.
It comes back to more than a valid point, but nothing's been found of the actual ships and the planes.
Going back to that.
It does. That's why it's a mystery.
Yeah. And then finally, just good old-fashioned human error. People mistakenly reading the charts or reading the compasses or making decisions that they shouldn't nearly have made, like flying on with a faulty engine, for example.
But if you're against time schedules, or if you're under stress and pressure, because you might be in a storm, your brain's working overtime, and you forget to check some other things. There's lots of reasons why, and we all make mistakes.
Yeah,
I mean, these have been very fatal mistakes, but we do make them.
Yeah. What have you got? Any others?
I've got one other, and it's a natural phenomenon that does actually occur. And they're called rogue waves.
Yeah.
Don't know if you've heard of these. And this checks out on paper. You can unexpectedly get a huge wave, right, that can rise two or three times above a normal wave.
Yeah.
And if you've got another one coming behind that, a boat can get caught between the two.
Yeah.
And it literally, the boat gets raised up above the water.
And then dropped.
And then the wave goes down and they just crash straight into it. And there was a British researcher did this in a lab. Now, obviously, it's a scale model, But they tried to prove that if we had a wave of 100 foot against a particular size ship,
yeah,
it worked, and that ship, model ship, kind of just crashed down. So if you extrapolate that out,
yes,
then it's a real thing that could have occurred.
Yeah. And, of course, we've got our old favourites, the aliens. Oh. The aliens did it. And I don't know if you've noticed, I mean, obviously everyone knows of UFOs, unidentified flying objects. Have you heard the new one that's been going around for the last few years?
The USO.
The USO, the unidentified submerged object.
The thing is, and it's only till recently, yeah, the US Navy now accept there are USOs.
Yes.
Unlike they don't accept the UFOs, but they class USOs as whales, sharks,
yeah,
other creatures or objects that interfere with the ship's maneuvering or the sonar operations,
yeah,
things like that. So they accept the USOs, but I think some people have extracted that and said, oh, well, it must be a UFO.
There must be a base under the ocean.
Sea.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And it's amazing. And what's fascinating, because, I mean, I don't know, I mean, if I'm up late one night and I can't really sleep and I just want something easy to watch, on Netflix, Amazon, all the other streaming agencies, you will find documentary after documentary about UFOs and UFO hunters and all the alien conspiracy theories. And literally in the last 3 years, I have seen this movement into saying, oh no, it's not UFOs. They're not coming from out of the atmosphere and from other galaxies. They're actually already here in underwater bases. And it's USOs that are causing the problems.
I mean, I personally, as you know, don't agree with that. However, what I would state is we know more about outer space.
Well, we know more about the surface of the moon
than we do about what's in the oceans.
Yeah.
And we've explored more of space than,
yeah,
we have the oceans.
I know.
So if you want to flip it on its head and you want to be one of these conspiracy theories, then there is, I won't say logic, I'll use that word, there is reasoning behind their thoughts.
There is, and I think also, I mean, it's a new lucrative market to actually start to explain things because UFOs have been done to death.
So it's like, well, I'm going to make some more money, I'll tell you what, I'll, yeah, write about USOs now.
Now, before we get sued, we're not saying that everyone, we're not saying that everyone who's investigating this, true, is driven by that. And I think there is a fascination there, and I think everything deserves a proper exploration if it's done scientifically, correct, in particular. And there are people that do that. But I think we have to caution against this sudden embracing of, well, everything's down to USOs now, and that explains the Bermuda Triangle. It might be one or two instances. We don't know. It might be, you know, there might be a massive Moby Dick whale down there that just decides that it wants to headbutt a ship. There may be a Captain Nemo-type submarine crew that go around trying to hoist off treasures and just stop ships from polluting the sea. There's all these things have been thrown into the hat at one time or another. If you had a gut feeling, what would you say?
I think there's logical reasons for everything we've discussed in terms of the disappearances.
Yeah.
I cannot explain away why there are no bodies or records as found.
Yeah.
The only two things that come to mind is that they have been swept away so far away from the search area,
yeah,
and then sank, that nobody's looked in that area.
Yeah.
Or they have dropped down the Puerto Rico Trench, which, yeah, nobody's been able to get to do, yeah, a proper investigation.
Yeah.
Other than that, you're into real conspiracy theories.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't even discussed dimensional rifts and time travel and all that kind of funky stuff, that, again, theories that have been put forward. Personally, I think that it's a combination of all the above. I think you've got the Gulf Stream, you've got the perfect storms, you've got the true magnetic north, you've got human error, you've got faulty equipment. And I think in that million square miles, any combination of those is going to cause a problem. Again, the mystery for me is not so much that ships and planes disappear in that area, because it is a busy thoroughfare. The mystery is, why has no wreckage been, correct, found?
The thing is, despite all this, the US government doesn't even recognise the Bermuda Triangle,
yeah,
as a specific area. It's just part of the Atlantic Ocean.
Yeah.
It doesn't appear on any official maps either.
No.
And the US Coast Guard and other Coast Guards don't give it any special attention either. It's just a place where there's been accidents, like there's been accidents at sea and there, everywhere. Yeah. There's more there, potentially, yeah. because it's more traffic. But I want to raise something, you've probably heard of this, is the Bader-Meinhof effect,
yeah.
which is frequency illusion. And once you see something once and you yeah. learn from it,
yeah.
funny enough, you seem to see it all the time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you're thinking about buying a car, your neighbour gets a car, let's say it's a Mercedes,
yeah.
all of a sudden you'll see Mercedes everywhere.
It's the RAS. It's the part of the brain.
It is.
It's the reticular activation system. Anyway, I can't remember what it... There is a point in your brain that goes, this is important to you, therefore I'm now going to notice every instance of it.
Absolutely. And the thing is about, you're more likely to accept something like, oh, there's a ship being lost in a hurricane.
Yeah.
Right, but you're going to question, why has a ship disappeared?
Yes.
And then all of a sudden, all ships are disappearing.
Yes.
But not really. Is it just your brain telling you that it
yeah.
is?
And if the sheer number of ships and planes through that area, and then you have the law of averages, of course.
Yeah.
You have to look at that as well. Are there more ships and planes disappearing in that area than in other areas of the planet?
Correct.
We just don't know.
I think it's always going to have an aura about it.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, there's not been that many disappearances recently, but because they can't explain away exactly what yeah. occurred, and there's no evidence to prove otherwise, you're going to get that.
You're
going to get that conspiracy thing.
So generally speaking, it's unsolved. So it's definitely something we should have discussed. We have our opinions. They may not be correct or true, but there are opinions. And we really would like it if you would come and share your opinions, because as ever, we have a forum. Now, I'll talk about that in a moment. Are there any last thoughts that you would like to just throw into the pot?
I think it's worth remembering that there's no evidence that that region is any more dangerous than anywhere else.
Yeah.
Okay. So for me, if you want to travel across Bermuda Triangle, you want to go to Bermuda, please do. Have a nice vacation, but wear a life jacket.
And send us a postcard, yeah. Right, so we mentioned the forum. So basically, if you go to darreninformed.com/thinkworksforum, you'll find that there's a post for this specific episode of ThinkWorks and our unsolved mysteries in particular. Go into that and give us your theories. We would love that. Or give us your favourite disappearance and ask us what we think. And we'll come in and we'll give you some answers. But we love talking about these. We'll have another one soon, I'm sure. Yeah. And I'll be back next week with another ThinkWorks on something else completely different. I've no idea what, because I never decided until the weekend before. But until then, thank you very much, Professor.
Thank you, Darren.
And we'll see you soon.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to this special ThinkWorks series within a series. We'll be back soon with another episode of Unexplained Mysteries, and of course the normal ThinkWorks format. In the meantime, however, don't forget to drop in your views on this episode on the corresponding forum post. Simply go to darreninformed.com/ThinkWorks forum, find the post for this episode, and tell us your theories on this mystery, as well as what other mysteries you would like Darren and Steve to discuss. Until then, take care all, and we'll see you soon.